that music. I love people that have talents of musical instruments, because I myself have none. Each of us has a different gift, and that particular gift of playing the piano is something that I wish that I had. It sounded beautiful. And for those of people that have been worried about me, I actually made it up here on the stage. I have a few health issues, including mobility, and one person was looking up on the stage for services. She saw the white chair here and she thought it was for me. I told her not to be concerned. A doctor was speaking before me, and he was on call, sitting right behind me. He's probably gotten more work done at this feast than he anticipated, but that's the way it is sometimes. No two feasts are ever the same. This is our third time in Hawaii for the feast, and this one is as different as the other two have been from each other. But I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to see some of you out there. You might smile and wave every once in a while to make sure you're there. You know, the title of this sermon is Building a Decent Society. When Jesus returns, he will build a decent society that will be based on the way of life described in this book, as he tries to hold it up. This is my wife's Bible. I have a very nice little Bible that I like to use, and it is sitting in my kitchen in my front room waiting to be packed. But fortunately, my wife has a new toy over there that she can, you know, things that kind of glow in the dark, and she can type the sermon notes into. She's having a ball with that, so I get to use her Bible. We've been hearing about the millennium all week. It's a time of peace, prosperity, and harmony. You've been keeping up with the newspapers. There's nothing like that in the world right now. What's been going on in Nairobi and Kenya, something that was supposed to be ended for about the last 3 days, and supposedly is finally ended. Why people have so much hate in them. They'll come from another country to attack a mall and kill people they don't even know. And supposedly three of the attackers were American and one was British. Now whether that's true or not, I do not know. But this world is becoming, the only word that comes to my mind is insane. It's getting worse by the day. But you know, it's not hard to have a good time on this island. The flowers are beautiful and the food is great. But we especially need the spiritual food that God has been providing us. That spiritual food is the only thing that we will take home that will have a lasting effect. Unless it's across our midsection because we ate too much. The kingdom of God is the only pearl of great price. You need to think about it. That has to be the most important thing in our lives. But we have a big problem. The Feast of Tabernacles is still a shadow of things to come. The reality of the world outside our doors is totally different from what we are picturing. The goal of world peace has eluded the world since Adam and Eve. Instead of world peace, the world is full of conflict. Not a big surprise, but because of modern communication and transportation, conflicts now affect nations around the world. And they promised me there was water down. I'm one of those people that's speaking all week without drinking water. They take the water away from me when they want me to have a short sermon. I've got two bottles. You guys are in trouble. But because of modern communication and transportation, conflicts now affect everyone around the world. In the 1800s, a civil war in Syria would raid an article on the back pages of American newspapers, if that. Now it is front page news. And the world's about to get a lot worse. Satan has this world spiraling downhill at an increasing rate. Let me read to you Matthew 24:22. We're all familiar with it from the Feast of Trumpets. But it's a short verse, but one with great meaning. Unless those days were shortened, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. This is the world we'll soon be returning to. The church of God is just a tiny part of this world. So the question I want to ask is very simple. Can a small group of people, the weak of the world, really make a difference? Now, I'm not talking about Abraham, Moses, Elijah, or the apostles. I am talking about you and me. To answer the question, I want to read you a quote from a book entitled In Search of History, A Personal Adventure by Theodore White, written in 1978. I decided to use a quote from the world because by this time most of the scriptures have been used anyway. I didn't think anybody would use this particular quote, so. Mr. White was a historian. He died in 1986. I doubt if he had ever heard of the Church of God. He had been in China before and during World War II and had met the top leaders in both the Nationalist and the Communist parties. He was in Berlin right after the end of World War II. He was very interested in times of great change, political change. And here is a quote from that book. Were I to become the scholar I once hoped to be, I would choose such moments of political embryology as my field of study and concentrate first on Germany. I would choose Germany because in 1933, a handful of men had seized a modern state and made its people the most hated nation in the world. In 1949 and 1950, I saw another handful of men take over in Germany. Dull, dreary, plotting men, and saw them convert Germany in the next 20 years into a decent society. But listen to what he says next. What frightens me then, and what frightens me still, is how very few men it takes at the head of any state to give it its character of good or evil, of freedom, tyranny, torture, butchery, or benevolence. End of quote. Hitler tried to create his version of the millennium, the German Reich that would last 1,000 years. There is a scene from the movie The Longest Day, which is a story of the Allied invasion of Europe, that stands out in my memory. Two German generals are talking to one another, and one says to the other, "Sometimes I wonder which side God is on." Talk about man's ability to deceive himself. And frankly, the worst is yet to come. The beast, the false prophet, the 10 kings and their cohorts have not yet arrived on the scene. The beast and false prophet will create a state that we refer to in the millennium as an evil tyranny. They use torture and butchery to achieve its goals. But let us grasp something very vital here. After Jesus returns, a few good men and women, the first resurrection, including hopefully you and me, will help to completely change the world and create a godly society. We cannot do it now. We wish we could, but we can't really have an impact on this world. It's not time yet. Everything hinges on the return of Jesus Christ. So that people can look at Jerusalem, as we heard in the first split sermon, and him sitting on the white chair. That's where the authority is going to be. A society with freedom for all, not just a few people. That would be very nice. You know, I'm taking a drink. I kept thinking that one of the reasons that Mr. Tuck is talking about his problems. If you want to know what one of the things that why there is people age, why people get older, is the best way I found out so far to learn humility. It's quite something to be in your youth, you being the one helping people to move places. We used to cart refrigerators up floors because nobody ever moved on the bottom floor for some reason. We had one woman that ran a candle factory. You think of these one little sweet little candles and everything. Have you ever seen a block of wax before they actually make the candles? Those things weigh a ton. And like I said, they never moved onto the first floor. Now I'm the one that needs help. And that really builds humility, I'll tell you. For you young people, you don't understand what I'm talking about, but you will in about 40 to 50 years. I wished I could run up and down the stairs like some of the people were doing right before services. But in the millennium, we can fly up and down the stairs with no problem. I'm glad that our future has to do with doing good for all people, not just a selected few. We will be able to make the Feast of Tabernacles a reality. Our destiny is to help build a godly society that will differ completely from the society created by the beast and false prophets. The government will truly be referred to as good and benevolent. It fascinates me when I think of the different perspective people will have of the fall holy days. Our perspective will depend on when people live. In one sense, you think, because the fall holy days are given for mankind from here clear through the end of the great white throne judgment. But we're the only ones that are looking at the Feast of Tabernacles as something coming in the future. And the millennium, it will be their reality. I have a hard time trying to figure out in my mind is how do you keep the Feast of Tabernacles when everybody in the world is keeping the Feast of Tabernacles? So you want the answer to that question? Be there and we'll find out. During the millennium, they will be celebrating a historical event. Gone will be any debate about whether Jesus ever lived. Gone will be any debate about which church is the true church. And gone will be any doubt of who is the head of that church. We wish we lived in that society right now. This is Rita and my 45th Feast of Tabernacles. I married a woman quite a bit younger than myself, and for 50 years I've been trying to keep up with her. And it's getting harder every year. And all that time, you could say we've been living in the shadow of the Great Tribulation. Time after time, events in the world seem to be building up to an explosion point. And time after time, the danger suddenly went away. The Cuban Missile Crisis in the early 60s was a case in point. Few people realize how exactly close we did come to war. But sanity ruled in the end. But you know, I'm not sure there's that much sanity left. Everything built up before World War I, everything was ready, just think. And all it took was one man, one gun, and two bullets. And before it was over, millions of people were dead. We're rapidly reaching that point again. But that crisis? Well, you know, a few days ago, it looked like President Obama was going to unleash American air power on Syria. It could have been the start of something that nobody could control. But suddenly, the tension calmed down. I read a history one time of Queen Elizabeth I, and she hated war. She felt that as long as there was diplomacy and everything, she was in control of things. But once the war started, she had no control over what happened. And that's true. When things suddenly come falling down about our heads, nobody's going to be able to control it. All we're doing is waiting for a spark to set it off. Isaiah 5:20. I personally think that there's something else going on that is going to have an enormous impact on the United States and the Church of God. Like Germany before World War II, the United States is slowly becoming the most hated nation on the earth. The president of Brazil, supposedly, according to news reports, is going to make a speech blasting the United States for intercepting Brazilian government communications. We invaded Iraq to dispose of Saddam Hussein, who it turned out was not in possession of any weapons of mass destruction. Now, nobody is sorry to see Saddam Hussein go, but at the same time, we destabilized the Middle East. We got rid of the main deterrent to Iran, and now we are preparing, or we are reaping the results of that action. Most of the world did not want America to bomb Syria. Everyone but our government could see that it probably would do more harm than good. So when we bomb a government that may or may not have used gas on their own citizens, the help of force that is telling Christians, convert or die. Does that make any sense to you? It is a point that increasingly, whatever we do doesn't come out right. Now, people look and blame President Obama, President Bush, President, whoever the next president's going to be, if time goes on long enough. But the Bible tells us that nothing will come out right because the people are disobeying him. I don't think anybody truly realizes that the main problem in this country stares back at them in the mirror in the mornings. Because until the people of the United States repent, nothing the government does is going to come out right. The world has become increasingly disillusioned with America because we have increasingly turned our back on the biblical principles that made us great. Isaiah 5:20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes, and prudent in their own sight. Leviticus 26:17. That seems to be every law that we pass, every policy we adopt, we're calling evil good and good evil. Now it seems that the United States is becoming so paranoid they were almost literally spying on everyone in the world, friend and foe alike. The list also includes its own citizens. Now, if they ever want to come after us, the Church of God, they won't have any trouble finding us because the way they can detect things nowadays, if they wanted to, they know everything that we do. I didn't believe that until last year when it came out exactly what our own government is doing to us. It reminds me of Proverbs 28:1. The wicked flee when no one pursues. Beginning to see enemies everywhere. We're not there yet, but what is happening reminds me of what God promised would happen to Israel when they disobeyed God. Leviticus 26:17. I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and we shall flee when no one pursues you. We're not there yet. But did we win in Korea? We certainly didn't win in Vietnam. We won the war in Iraq, but we are losing the peace. Verse 36, as for those of you who are left, I will send faintness into their hearts in the land of their enemies. The sound of a shaking leaf shall cause them to flee. They shall flee as though fleeing from a sword. And they shall fall when no one pursues. They shall stumble over one another as if it were before a sword, when no one pursues, and you can have no power to stand before your enemies. How long will it be before God removes all the protection from this country? Well, why bring it up here at the Feast of Tabernacles? Because we as a church are going to have to live through the future. In a recent focus on the work given by Mr. Kubik, I was impressed by the list showing the results of the Kingdom of God seminars. 7 of the top 10 congregations were located in the Philippines. That's very impressive. We wish we had the same results in our areas. But even those great statistics pale when we note that it is out of a nation of 100 million. All that changes when the Father tells Jesus it is time to return. When Jesus returns, we'll be able to work with every human being on the face of the earth, maybe in some of our own relatives. And we will no longer have the limitations of this human body. That would be wonderful. I would be loved to know this book backwards and forwards, to be able to relate one verse to another like Jesus meant when he inspired what is written here. Now, I go in the garage and wonder why I'm there. I wish that was a joke. But you know, the main God of this country, which is rapidly becoming science, has let us down, which leads me to my second quote. This time from a work of fiction. How many of you have seen the movie Jurassic Park? Well, this is from the book. You won't find this in the movie. It is a theme from the work by Michael Crichton. Mr. Crichton puts some very interesting thoughts in the words he wrote for Dr. Malcolm. I think he does a great job in describing how science has failed us and why. Quote, "You know what we are really talking about here," Malcolm said, "all this attempt to control? We're talking about attitudes that are 500 years old. They began at the time when Florence, Italy was the most important city in the world. The basic idea of science, that there was a new way to look at reality, that was objective, that it did not depend on your beliefs or your nationality, that it was rational. That idea was fresh and exciting back then. It offered promise and hope for the future, and it swept away the old medieval system, which was hundreds of years old. The medieval world of feudal politics and religious dogma and hateful superstition fell before science. But this was because the medieval world didn't really work anymore. It didn't work economically, it didn't work intellectually, and it didn't fit the new world that was emerging. But now science is the belief system hundreds of years old. Like the medieval system before it, science is starting not to fit the world anymore. Science has attained so much power that its practical limits have begun to become apparent. Largely through science, billions of us live in a world densely packed and intercommunicating. But science cannot help us decide what to do with that world or how to live. Science can make a nuclear weapon, but it cannot tell us not to build it. Science can make pesticides, but cannot tell us not to use it. And our world starts to seem polluted in fundamental ways, air, water, and land, because of ungovernable science. That much is obvious to everyone." End of quote. Michael Crichton did not know the answer to the problems, but we do. Modern-day Israel has accepted science as its new religion, and that new religion is growing stronger by the day. But let's be clear. There is nothing wrong with science. Man has not discovered anything that God did not put there in the first place. Where man falls short is how he uses science. He messes it up virtually every time. Evolution, which was an attempt to explain the natural world without God as the creator, has now grown until it affects every area of our lives. But science cannot provide the moral background that this world so desperately needs. This world lacks godly character. The answer to the problems of this world can only come from those who qualify for the first resurrection. We are the ones that will be able to teach the world how to make sound decisions, but only if we learn how to make sound decisions now. The blessings of the world tomorrow is not really for us, but for the benefit of our subjects. The world tomorrow can still build vast armies, but they won't, because they will be shown that's not the way to do. farms of 1,000 acres, growing the same crop year after year after year, could still be done. But it won't be, because we'll teach them the right way. The main driving force will no longer be the bottom line, but the benefit of those that come after us. No longer will we have a nation like the United States with this enormous debt hanging over our children. I think everything will be focused on preparing the world for the great white throne judgment. But how does God know that we'll be able to do that? By how we live our lives today, by how we treat other people in and out of the church. Not only how we treat others at the feast, but how we live the year around. When there's nobody other church member around, only God watching us. The thinking of the rulers in the world tomorrow will be totally different from this world. Why? Because the people in the first resurrection will be pointing everyone to Jerusalem, where the ruler of the earth will be sitting on his throne. You saw the white chair here. That white chair will literally exist in Jerusalem in the millennium. John 17:20. And because all the rulers will have the mind of Jesus, the earth will have a unity it has never had before. If we are to be a part of the solution for the problems of the earth, we must develop the unity that Jesus prayed for before his death. John 17:20. I do not pray for these alone, but for those who believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And the glory which you gave me I have given them, that they may be one just as we are one. The mindset is not something we will develop after the resurrection. It is something we have to develop now. I set this timer here, and it seems to be going much faster than I thought it was going to be. Let me read to you Zechariah 14:16. We're very familiar. It's been read many times here. And it has come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem will come up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Why does God want the world to do that? Everything else, because obviously you got a world of this, population is rapidly going to be increased. Not everybody can do it. Maybe it'll be the trip of a lifetime. Maybe representatives from each nation, they'll come to do it. But it helps everyone to keep their mind focused on Jerusalem, not on their individual nations, not on my football team versus your football team. You know, this is the world of competition. And sometimes that competition can bring you great sadness, especially if you're a 49er fan. For those of you who don't know, the 49ers have been having the opposite season they had last year. Your 49er season, don't read the newspapers. It will help to give people a greater vision than just their own nation. 1 Peter 2:1. Therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking. Can you imagine a presidential campaign without that in it? Can you visualize a television commercial that told the truth? We want you to buy our car. It's the worst on the market. There's an old story that there was a competition years ago in the Soviet Union between the Soviet car and the American Ford. The American car won hands down, which the American newspaper reported. In the Soviet Union, they told the truth also with a slight twist to it. They said the Russian car in the competition came in second, Well, the American car came in next to last. Can you see how you can manipulate things and how this world manipulates things and why we can't do it? In order not to do it in the world tomorrow, we have to not do it now. What we are trying to do is totally contrary to everything this world now believes in. Verse 9. Does this next verses describe how we look at one another? It describes a totally different worldview. You're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, His own special people, that may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Is this how we look at ourselves? Do we look at ourselves as Americans, British, or where we come from? Or do we realize that our calling is for the benefit of the entire world? Do you qualify for 10 cities? Is there any part of this world that you don't want those 10 cities to be? If there is, then we have some more growing to do. How does God know we'll do that? By how we live our lives today. Jesus will return to save the whole world, not just the church, and not just our own country. The world has wasted its resources. Only we can teach them to have the right priorities. But only we have the right priorities now. None of us know what this next year is going to bring, least of all me. But I do know that the sermons we have already heard and the sermons we will still hear are inspired by God to help strengthen us for what is to come. I have often considered the question, and I think we all have at one time, how does God look at me? I think we need to be someone that God sees as a ruler that will fulfill Matthew 5:9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. The church, you and me, are being judged right now. Following a man we showed in 1995 can be very dangerous to our health. We need to follow the words in this book. We cannot follow anybody like happened in 1995 that says, well, this no longer applies to what we believed before. And you have to be grounded in this book. So who shall we follow? The theme of this year's feast, I think, says it all. Let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus. Our final goal is to be worthy to wear white in the first resurrection.